This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today, and we're going to spend some time today talking about Campus Town in Ames. And we will be introducing the community service featured this month in our Community Service Appreciation Program, which is led by Kay Patak. This month, we'll take a look at the Story County Community Foundation. But first, let's get started, as we often do on Local Talk, with a brief look at the natural world. Looking at the phenology calendar, which is the calendar of natural events throughout the year, we learn that the onset of December is the beginning of the season for great horned owls to begin establishing their territories for nesting and raising their young. Territories of the great horned owl are maintained by the same pair of owls for as many as 8 consecutive years. Average home ranges in varied studies have been shown to be approximately 1.5 square miles. Great horned owls nest early during December and January, and they do not build a nest of their own, but use the nests of other birds, such as the hawk, crow, and heron. They could also use squirrels' nests, hollows in trees, rocky caves, and abandoned buildings. The female will usually lay 5 eggs in February once the nest is prepared. 1 egg is laid every day for 5 days, and the eggs have an incubation period of 28 days. The young birds will usually begin flight after 11 or 12 weeks, but they often fall out of the nest before then, so the parents will feed them and watch them on the ground until they're able to fly away. These magnificent birds, the great horned owl, stand up to 2 feet high, and they have a wingspan of up to 5 feet wide. What makes their look distinctive is the tufts of feathers found on their heads that resembles horns. Obviously, they're called horned owls because of their horns, but they're often also called tigers of the sky because of their black, brown, orange, and white feathers and their large yellow eyes. Magnificent bird to look at. The nickname Tiger of the Sky also comes from the bird's ferocious attitude. They are one of the few cannibalistic species. A great horned owl is powerful enough to take prey 2 or 3 times heavier than itself. No small feat, bringing large birds down, including other owls, the grouse, woodpeckers, crows, turkeys, pigeons, red-tailed hawks, great blue herons, ducks, gulls, and swans. The great horned owls prefer rabbits, but will also hunt over 250 species of animals, such as rodents, squirrels, minks, skunks, they can't smell, raccoons, armadillos, porcupines, moles, muskrats, and bats. They may sometimes even take cats or small domestic dogs. They will also hunt snakes, turtles, lizards, and other animals like young alligators, amphibians, frogs, toads, and salamanders. Prey is usually killed instantly when grasped by the large talons. So, respect to the great horned owl. This information was provided by Owl Pages at owlpages.com, a website of information about owls, and Iowa State University Veterinary Medical Center. The phenology calendar we use is called the Raccoon River Phenology Calendar. It is a beautiful calendar featuring large reproductions of the work of many Iowa photographers, and it is put together by Lee Searles. If you are interested in the phenology calendar, you can reach Mr. Searles at searleslr@msn.com. That's searleslr@msn.com. That's searleslr@msn.com. We'll take a short break, and then we'll start speaking with our guests here in the studio. We're going to be talking about Campus Town in Ames.
Thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm very pleased to have guests with me today. Jeff Benson is from the City of Ames Division of Planning and Housing. Also, we have two architects here. One is Sam Stagg and
Art Baumgartner.
Art Baumgartner. You're from the HALA Architecture Structure Planning.
That's correct.
In November, the November 18th exactly, a presentation was made to the City Council introducing some design concepts for a facade grant program.
Mm-hmm.
For Campus Town. Jeff, you gave the presentation together with Kelly Diekman, Director of Planning and Housing, and Sam Stagg and Art Baumgartner. You two were the architects, part of HALA Architecture, which is the design firm that the city has retained to consult on developing design concepts for this project.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very interesting to hear about these momentous changes in Campus Town. I mean, you can't miss the fact that Campus Town is transforming as we speak. So this is another aspect of this that's less obvious. We're seeing the construction going on, but this is a more long-term ambition. Before we start, Jeff, Ames has a downtown facade program as well, right?
That's correct.
How long have they had that?
About 12 years.
Can you describe a little bit what the criteria is in downtown Ames?
Yes, downtown Ames facade project is targeted towards buildings downtown that have retail and commercial use on the ground floor. And the overall approach is to try to create a consistent image and appearance that's based on a historical theme. And so generally we are removing inappropriate parts of the facade and replacing them with the more appropriate parts of the facade. So it's a renovation project.
Historical restoration.
Yes, it's not precise and exacting as some historic restoration is, but yes, it's trying to restore a more historic image to the whole area.
And that happened here on our building, the Pantorium. Our landlord was able to restore it to its original facade through the project.
It was a very successful project because so much of the original historic material was there.
Yeah, yeah, it's a beautiful building.
It really is.
What is the Campus Town facade grant project? How is it different from the downtown one?
Well, they're both geared towards improving the appearance of the buildings, but the approach in Campus Town is completely different. In the first place, we're not trying to create a consistent image. One of the things that we treasure about Campus Town is how much variety there is in the appearance of the buildings. We're also not basing it upon an historic theme or historic character. If you look around Campus Town, you can see that there's been constant change,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of different eras are represented. We're going after something that's more intrinsically important in Campus Town, which is the variety of the appearance and the way that the people work and use Campus Town. We knew right away that taking the same design guidelines, the same approach that we have for the downtown facade project wouldn't be appropriate in Campus Town.
That's where HALA comes in?
Do I say HALA? HALA, yeah, HALA. That's right. That's
HALA
right.
Architecture. Yeah, so that's where you come in.
That's right. When we asked by the city to submit a proposal for the project, we were very excited about the job. Both of Art and I and most of our office went to Iowa State University, and so Campus Town was a big part of our lives for that time in our college career. And so when we put together the proposal, we thought, well, this has to be a little bit different because Campus Town is not necessarily rooted in historical precedents, okay? And so we thought, okay, what would be a good approach to providing direction for the future of Campus Town that would appeal to a wide range of budgets even? And so it becomes a very difficult process because most incentive programs are centered around a list of do's and don'ts, so
mm-hmm.
to speak, where
right.
you have to have a certain percentage of glass or brick or other type of material. This project, we felt that it would really lend itself to something different. So instead of having a list of do's and don'ts, there are a list of what we would refer to as design concepts or and principles.
And that's the idea book that was created.
That's correct.
Before we get into the idea book, Jeff, what exactly is the area that we're talking about?
Generally, the area that we're interested in working on these facade grant projects is the commercial part of Campus Town, which runs from Lincoln Way down about a block to the south, a block and a half, and from Lynn Street west to Sheldon. So that's the area that most people think of as Campus Town or the commercial Campus Town. And then it also includes that little commercial area on West Street that's about two blocks west of the west edge of campus.
How did this project start?
Well, the City Council started it, and the City Council has been talking about this for quite a few years as the downtown facade grant project really took off when we began to see business owners and building owners investing in their buildings. As a result of that, I think there was an interest on the council for doing the same thing in Campustown because it's always been a goal to revitalize in Campustown. So it's probably been 8 years or so that the idea has been talked about.
2013, there were a series of focus groups to talk about that.
Yeah, I think it's important to realize that one of the reasons why this finally came to fruition was an organization was created called Campustown Action Association. And that's an organization of business owners, property owners, representatives of the university and of students and customers. They had the focus groups starting in 2013. It's really an independent organization that started up separately from the city government. Mm-hmm.
Campustown Action Association held focus groups.
They realized that the city council needed to see what kinds of projects would be appropriate. They needed to hear from the stakeholders in Campustown about what is important to encourage and what should be the goals of it. So Campustown Action hosted the focus group starting in the late summer, fall of 2013.
What kind of people were involved?
There were representatives of some retail businesses, some building owners. There was a representative of the Memorial Union who's on the Campustown Action Association. Art Baumgartner here was also on that group. I don't know if there are any other.
Yep, that's correct. At that point in time, we Hale Architecture were actually located in Campustown. We have since relocated to Main Street due to some of the construction. But we were both a designer and a business owner in the area.
And then there was a couple of students.
Well. How would you characterize the focus group?
It was good discussion. One thing that immediately rose to the top as an idea for this program was that creating a consistent image in Campustown was not a priority, as a lot of facade improvement programs are. We really wanted to celebrate the diversity of businesses and the diversity of buildings. That was an idea that rose to the top pretty quickly. Another idea that rose to the top pretty quickly was the idea of transparency, allowing the street and the interiors of the buildings to blend and merge with one another, so allowing those spaces to really blend.
It's a really different approach than downtown. Downtown is the kind of brick original building, and Campustown is about diversity, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. Two really different personalities are emerging in the two historic business areas of Ames.
Mm-hmm. If you talk to students and alumni from Iowa State who remember Campustown about what they like about it, it's the freedom and nature of Campustown that invites all kinds of different styles and people to feel comfortable there.
Because Iowa State is really a very diverse university from people from all over the world, really.
That's right.
Yeah. There was also another set of work groups that was led, I think, by HALA. Is that correct? And can you describe those work groups?
Yeah, there's a work group that was pulled together ranging from many of the folks that were part of the original focus discussions to some additional folks, once again, some business owners. Jeff and Kelly were a part of it as city representatives, and then Art and I led it, and that was really beginning to really hash out what this thing is going to be, you know, and think about what the specifics of the idea book would be. And actually, we had the idea of the idea book when we first proposed the project from our office, but really didn't have it worked out just yet. And so thinking through with those other folks of that group was very valuable in that collaborative effort, which really represented what Campustown is all about, just this collaborative movement to create a great place, I think was really captured and embodied in that group.
Did you find that people were enthusiastic when they were in the focus group?
Very, I would say, that people were excited to see that there's going to be opportunity for businesses to revitalize themselves and invest in their own buildings. We can tell people are excited. As part of those focus groups, we even had some homeowners from the area and some student representatives, and it was good to see that they were, too, excited about it.
So there was a general sense that it's time to transform Campustown.
Absolutely.
And Iowa State was involved, too, with the focus groups?
Not specifically in terms of a specific representation from administration. However, there's a handful of folks from various student groups and whatnot that were present and then offered some input and insight.
Mm-hmm. And the Campustown Action Association intrinsically has involvement from campus as well.
So there's communication going that way as well.
Exactly.
This all then culminated in the idea book, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah.
And the idea book is essentially pulling together, I would assume, the ideas that you, business people, homeowners, students, various other, the city, you had, that these ideas were all embodied together with, in a way, the expertise and the experience your firm has. Am I correct?
That's right. The idea book is essentially has two primary parts to it. And there are the first half of the idea book represents design concepts. And there are five primary concepts that we're working with. And I'll just dive into some of these.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. The first one is what we refer to as transparent campus town, where on the ground level, we're promoting a sense of transparency. And so
that term makes it sound like you're being very honest.
That's a good way to describe it. That's right. So when you walk by a business, you can see what they're doing. There's some authenticity there that it's welcoming. It can be bright, you know, in terms of both natural and artificial light, depending on the time of day.
By transparency, you mean glass, right?
That's right. Yeah, essentially glass.
And the ability to see in.
Yeah, that's one way to describe it. Glass is having a lot of windows on the front. That's probably the easiest way and probably one of the most cost-effective as well in terms of hitting transparency. However, there's another idea and some products out there to where it'd be great if we can open up these facades and allow people to walk in and out. And we'll have to work with other city ordinances on things like health codes and whatnot to make sure that we allow for this transparency but not let other things in that you don't want. Primarily, essentially, what it would be is a lot of windows, a lot of glass on the front. So that's what represents.
Imagine on a really nice spring day, the whole front of a building just opening up and allowing people to move in and out. That would really add to the vibrancy of the district.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
A lot of the type of business we would associate that with would be restaurants and cafes.
Absolutely.
You know, and you've been to cities where there are outdoor cafes to where you can sit outside and there's this open transparency between the indoor dining area and some outdoor seating. And it's just a really great, vibrant way to promote that business.
But even retail, if you look at a traditional mall, they're set up such that they open up their entire storefront to the interior walkway of a mall. Retail really benefits when you have this sidewalk presence to pull people in and be inviting.
Mm-hmm. A sense of space is nice, too, because Campus Town is a relatively dense and congested area. So if you get a sense of space within the buildings, it can create more space, right?
Good point, yeah. If you can utilize some of those indoor spaces that contribute to the outdoor space. And there's some businesses don't lend themselves to that, right? And so this notion of transparency in that regard in terms of opening it up may not work for every space, and we understand that. But you raise a good point that if you can open up those sidewalks a little bit and you allow people to come in and out, then it offers a larger area, I guess, you can walk around in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what's the next one?
Yeah, the next one is what we call a social campus town. We'd like to promote a social campus town where there's public improvement or improvement of public space, creating maybe park-like gathering spaces, well-lit spaces. A campus town that can really promote a lot of social activity. People attract people. And so if you can get people there that like to hang out there and spend just their free time there, not even just being there to buy something or be served by someone, but yet just there because of some of the vibrancy, you know, that's an area we'd like to promote.
Well, that's interesting because I kind of experience Welch Avenue as a funnel right now, where the flow of people kind of gets like a rapid. It just gets kind of shooted down this funnel, and it creates this space that is not that comfortable to be in. And in a way, there's no place for a place to slow down.
Interesting,
And that's what I'm imagining when you're saying areas where people could go and get rid of this feeling that everything's just rushing down this one narrow channel. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that's a great analogy. There are a handful of pockets in Campus Town now that promote a place to hang out and not have to necessarily shop or go somewhere. But one of the things that we're trying to think through are what would be considered the back areas of buildings or of spaces. And while the initial pilot program that we're embarking upon will promote the front facades of buildings, you can't deny that there's some really interesting space in Campus Town that are kind of considered in the background, so to speak. And so how can we – well, we're really thinking through creating ideas and concepts that will also promote the backside of some of these spaces.
Like the parking lot.
Yeah, the parking lot, that kind of – that's right. That's behind a handful of those businesses. That's an area that's under discussion on how we handle that as well.
Yeah. Okay, next concept.
Yeah. The next one is a diverse campus town. So promoting an eclectic environment, something that's vibrant and interesting, maybe potentially integrating public art. If campus town is anything, it's has a lot of diverse types of architecture and facades, but also people who use it. You mentioned earlier that Iowa State is a diverse place, and so how can we capture some of those interests, you know, and create buildings and facades that represent that. And so it's not simply something that's founded in, for instance, a historical precedent, but offering concepts and ideas that promote that diverse climate that we have already in campus town.
Celebrating the variety.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. That's right. To create something that celebrates diversity that we have. Yep.
Okay. And then what else?
Yeah. An identifiable campus town. Using well-articulated signage, but somehow communicating on the exterior of the buildings where you're going, what the business is about, well-lit signage and just identification of what these businesses are. And so, once again, we'll have to work with the current city ordinances on what these signs look like and what they do. But we want to make sure people are able to get where they're going and it's identifiable. And then the last one would be and a historic campus town. There's not too many buildings left down there that have a historic, I guess, component or that have been well maintained. And so if we could
– they've been torn down, actually.
That's right. And so while the program isn't necessarily promoting a historical precedent or maintaining an historic era of design and construction – we'd like to maintain what we do have down there. And so when it allows itself to do that, we want to help those folks who do have a historical building maintain that.
Somebody comes to us with a building that still has historic integrity and they want to restore it, then we want to encourage that, but it's not going to be a mandatory part of it. For all the projects, we want to make sure we don't remove or destroy an historic material that's there.
Is Lincoln Way, as it passes through Campus Town, is that part of the original Lincoln Highway?
Yes, it is.
Presumably, Campus Town was partly developed along the Lincoln Highway on purpose.
That's right. One of the major times when Campus Town was built up was right after the Lincoln Highway was established in 1913. Mm-hmm.
So there is some history there.
There definitely is.
Yeah. Could you repeat again what the five design concepts are?
Yeah, you bet. There's transparency. There's diversity. There's social.
There's historic.
Historic and identifiable.
And identifiable.
Yeah.
That's a really diverse set of goals or ambitions. It strikes me as a pretty creative approach to building a neighborhood or to a facade grant project. Is this unique?
Well, that's a good question. If you take a step back and think about what successful architecture is, I think successful architecture will embody a lot of those concepts, or at least a handful of those. And so we understand that every building or facade won't be able to maximize or hit on all of those criteria. But I think quality architecture and some of the buildings downtown do lend themselves to a lot of those. And so while it's unique probably to a facade grant or an incentive program, they're not unique to quality architecture and quality design.
The idea book is online for folks to look at. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's online on the City of Ames website, which is cityofames.org. And under our government, you can find the various departments. And if you look for Planning Division, on the Planning Division homepage, there's a What's New button, and it's one of the items under What's New. It says Campus Town Facades.
Right. Very, very important to look at the What's New button.
Otherwise, you have to scroll down a little bit to get to the What's New, but it's there on the homepage of the Planning Division.
Yeah.
And as Sam said, there's the description of those five concepts, and then there's about 10 or so example projects in the idea book as well. There's a lot of images in this document, so it takes a little while to download,
right,
but it's worth the wait.
It's definitely worth the wait. It's a lot of fun to dream about what happens next. Jeff, what does happen next now? Where are we at with this project?
The City Council has approved these design concepts as the basis for two pilot projects. They last year budgeted $30,000 to do two pilot projects where the city matches dollar for dollar an owner's investment in their facade.
Funding of the facade grants will come from the city.
That's right.
It'll be publicly funded.
They're publicly funded. Typically, they come from the local option sales tax, which some of that sales tax is generated by sales in Campustown. We'll be soliciting proposals for these two projects during the winter. Probably in March or late February, we will bring pilot projects to the city council for them to consider which two they want to proceed with. And so they should be underway this spring.
Are you going to have to recruit projects, or do you have folks that are already waiting to do this?
We have three building owners who have approached us. One of them has a fairly large building. One of them has a retail, small retail building. A couple of them have restaurants in their building. So we've got interested people, and we really haven't promoted the thing yet either.
Mm-hmm. And there was some concern during the city council about individuality of the buildings. There was some concern expressed about that at the city council.
Well, I think the city does not want to remove some of the unique characteristics, particularly historic characteristics of the, some of the buildings. And, you know, a lot of the historic materials and design aspects of a building have been covered up over the years by new materials. So in the way we go about doing facade improvements and removing some of those materials, we need to be careful to leave intact what's been there for 100 years.
Or what we put in place. You know, some of the past decades haven't been as kind to the aesthetic appeal of some of the buildings in Campustown in terms of metal siding and metal panels. And
I heard a lot of complaints about the exposed beams and the stucco building.
Right.
And so we want to have a long-term view of the building and realizing that retail images come and go, but we, when we add things to the building, we want to be aware that the building is going to be there for a long time.
Right.
Are there any particular criteria you're going to use in order to who to choose?
I think that, you know, we don't expect projects to incorporate all of these design concepts, but projects that incorporated more of the design concepts would probably have a higher priority with city council than a project that had incorporated fewer of the design concepts.
Mm-hmm. In a way, there's a little bit of a point system.
Yeah. And yeah. If the council decides to, after the pilot projects are done, decides to continue funding this year by year, then we'll probably come up with a little bit more of an analytical way to look at those applications.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, so this is really, in a way, a full circle moment. At one time, there was a plan to actually tear down a lot of the buildings in Campustown and bring in a whole other design from one company. And now, over the years, what you've had is a process where the business people and the people that live there have come together and have discussed what they really want there. And now you're coming up with a design that, in a way, celebrates the diversity of that area and builds with what you have there. Am I characterizing this correctly?
I think that's true. I think that we found that the successful way to continue to have a vital district like this is to build on what's there and to be incremental and to listen to the local property owners and business people about what they see as being valuable.
And did you like what you heard?
We did very much. And you know, this is it's interesting to be involved in something that is trying to stimulate creativity in this way.
Is Campustown going to look very different in the near future?
I think it'll be more subtle changes. I mean, obviously, Campustown will look very different a year from now because we have some major projects being built.
Right.
But this will be a nice complement to that in the sense that you'll see subtle changes along Lincoln Way and along Welch Avenue and along Hayward, here and there, not all in one place.
At the very least, we might see some walls being replaced by glass, right?
That's right. And think about, in downtown, we've done over 30 facade projects. So think about 30 new Campustown facades. It would have a tremendous impact.
It's a lot of change. Mm-hmm. Any last words?
I just would like to thank the Campustown Action Association for being persistent about this and for launching this whole effort to get the focus groups going.
Yeah, the group has been great to work with, and it's been a fun collaborative effort. And that's something that we promote in our office, just the value of a collaborative effort to create something really special. So it's been a lot of fun, and so I'm very appreciative of all the people that have participated.
This is Local Talk, and we've been talking about Campustown. I've been here with Jeff Benson and Sam Stagg. Art Baumgartner. Jeff is with the City of Ames Planning and Housing, and Art and Sam are with Hala Architecture, a local architecture firm, which is consulting with the City of Ames to come up with what sounds like a very creative and community-based concept.
That's right.
And really coming up with some abstract ideals for what you want people to aspire to. So it should be very interesting to see how people interpret these ideals and
That's
these
right.
goals.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming. And would you promise to come back and tell us what happens?
Yeah, that'd be great. Absolutely. We'd love to.
Okay, cool. Okay.
Thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and that was Winter Woods by Peter Mayer. If you listen somewhat regularly to Local Talk, first of all, thank you. But you may be getting a little sick of this song because it's currently my favorite song, and I can't get enough of playing it on KHOI. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host today, and every month we feature a community service organization in the area. And this month we will look at the Story County Community Foundation for our friends and our neighbors next door. Kay Patak filed this report, which she recorded last week with them.
For this month's Community Service Appreciation Program, we're featuring Story County Community Foundation and Jennifer Garst, who's the executive director of the Story County Community Foundation, has come in to talk about the grants, and she's brought with her some recipients of the grants in the past, so they'll be telling us about what they've done with the money that they received. So welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Let's start with you, Jennifer. Why don't you tell us, first of all, about the types of grants that Story County awards to people?
The Community Foundation is privileged to have these funds from the County Endowment Program, and we do a grant process that is available to any nonprofit or governmental organization in Story County that will support the betterment of community. And we fund arts, culture, social services. Basically, if it's a good cause, we will support it.
And I know you've funded KHOI Radio three times.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very grateful for that.
Yeah, we provided some of your startup funding. Mm-hmm. We helped with your tower and the console that you're sitting in front of right now. We helped support. So we have done a lot of startup monies for different programs. We also provide capital grants for people who want to improve their facilities or to buy equipment they did not have. So it's kind of goes across the board. The only things we do not do is we don't do operating costs. So just the ongoing operating support we will not provide, nor will we provide like a big capital campaign. Usually we stay away from those. We prefer to fund for different items or things.
Right, so specific things, items mm-hmm. within a capital campaign.
Yes, we have done that.
And I believe there's different amounts in the different types mm-hmm. of grants.
At this point, what we have been doing is we give one $25,000 grant away each year, and that provides a bigger impact, countywide impact that we try to do. And then we give as many $6,000 grants as we are able to grant out each year. And that's then getting more breadth in our grants. Mm-hmm. We also set aside $5,000 of the money we have available for our youth philanthropy effort. We have been partnering in the past with the Volunteer Center of Story County, and that group, we have high school students who are granting out their own grant process.
So the high school students decide
yes.
to whom they'd like to give the grants.
Yes, and it's a smaller grant amount mm-hmm. In a different grant cycle, but it's very fun to see high school students learning how to give money away. And it's not an innate skill. It's mm-hmm. actually very hard because they have to decide who is better qualified to receive the grants or not. And I have to do truth in advertising. I'm here talking about the Community Foundation, but I'm actually very fortunate that I don't get to decide about the grants. That is an allocations committee that decides, and I am very fortunate because it's a hard decision of who gets grants and who doesn't.
Well, maybe we should talk about that next, and that is, how do you decide who gets a grant?
It is an allocations committee. At this point, we have Story County Community Foundation members or board members who are on the allocations committee, as well as two community members who are on the allocations committee. So it's a total of 10 people this last cycle, and they get together and basically talk through the grants and decide which ones are better suited for our mission and purpose mm-hmm. than the others. And I have to say, it's many worthy grants are not funded just because we don't have enough money.
Right.
We always get far, far more grants than we have money.
Grant applications, yeah. Mm-hmm. Could you say a bit more about the $25,000, the big grant? What kind of things, what kind of projects do you look for that big grant?
Big impact, or things that will really make a difference. So, for instance, we just gave grants away last week for this year, and then a year ago we gave grants away. Mm-hmm. And the people who are going to speak today, they received a grant long enough ago that their grant is now complete.
So they've done what they said they'd do with them.
So the grant we just gave away last week for the major grant went to the Story County Fair Association for the renovation of the community building.
Oh, okay.
And it's a historical building at the fairgrounds, and that really helps FFA and 4-H kids. So that is affecting kids from all over the county who use that building as part of the fair. as well as that building is also run by the Parks and Recs Department in Nevada, and so it is a community center as well for the town of Nevada. So those are the things that we want, breadth and effect.
I see.
And a year ago, our major grant went to the Primary Health Care Center, which provides health care for underinsured or no insurance people. A fifth of them are non-native speakers of English. So it's a population that doesn't have access to health care, and that provides health care to Story County residents who would not otherwise have it.
Now, you mentioned your mission, that your mission comes into play, obviously, when you decide who gets money. Could you say a bit more about your mission?
Our mission is really to promote philanthropy in Story County, and that means providing funds to nonprofits that can make good use of it, as well as we do build endowments to support nonprofits. Mm-hmm. So it's the future of our county is helping with philanthropy, and I always like to say we want to make the philanthropy dollar go further for the donor as well as for the organization that receives it.
Yes, and we will be talking more with Jennifer later in the month about the endowments program. So we'll be hearing more about that later this month. But today we're going to focus on these smaller grants more. Where does the money come from?
That's always an interesting one, and one that's kind of a little sensitive, because it is coming primarily from something called the County Endowment Program, which is a statewide program where every gaming establishment state chartered in our county provides tax revenues that is shared with every county that does not have a gaming establishment. So a large portion of the money that we give away each year is coming from the gaming industry that arrives at Story County and also every other county that doesn't have gaming. We receive between $80,000 and $100,000 we're able to grant out each year. The Community Foundation actually started in 2005 because of this revenue source, and that the revenue has to be distributed by a community foundation. And since 2005, our county has received more than $1 million of this money that we're able to grant out. 75% of it is required to grant out immediately. 25% is held in a permanent endowment, so it's granted out, but in an endowment distribution. So that's where a large portion of our money has come. In the last few years, we're fortunate that Story County Community Foundation has been able to raise more money so that we are starting to supplement the grant funds with money that is generated within the county. And that's very exciting to me that we're starting to fund our own grants internal to our county, and it's not being as dependent on the statewide money.
Well, thinking of who gets these grants, it's probably time to introduce some of the recipients of these grants. And we'll start with David Williams from the Lions Club of Story County, who has recently received a grant last year. He's completed this project. Welcome, David.
Yes, we were very fortunate a year ago to get in on the cycle. And we did receive funding from Story County Community Foundation, along with some other sources of money. We were able to put together to buy equipment, modern equipment, that we could go into preschools and daycares and other community locations and take photographs of children's eyes and send those photographs electronically to the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics for reading there by professionals. And when a problem was detected, parents are notified, guardians are notified.
Yes, you brought a picture of this device. It's quite a small device. Fund actually paid for this piece of equipment that takes photographs of the children's eye. This corrects problems, not the kind of problems, you know, where children would probably wear glasses, but other kinds of problems that are detectable before they can even read, before they go to school.
Yes,
what kind of problems does it
detect? We focus on early childhood, mm-hmm. Anywhere from 6 months to 48 months before children actually enter kindergarten. And many of them have no way of communicating that they have an eye problem, because if they have trouble seeing, they may just think it's normal.
Exactly.
So we try to focus on the early childhood, and well, about 5% of the children that we screen are referred. And so that amounts to quite a number.
That's quite a lot, yes.
With a new device that we just were able to purchase with this grant, we've already screened, in the last 9 months, over 250 kids in Story County. I just represent the Ames Breakfast Lions Club. We took the initiative to write the grant, but the device can be used by any of the Lions Clubs in Story County.
What kind of problems does this device detect?
One of the most common ones is what they call ambliopia, which is commonly called lazy eye.
Well, in fact, Tricia, I think it was you when we were talking before, you said your daughter had this problem.
Yes, and we had no idea until she received a screening at school, and then we took her to see our ophthalmologist, and she got glasses. But yes, otherwise we never would have known.
Now, lazy eye means one eye's, the muscles are a bit weak, and it's a little slow following the other eye.
Correct.
But so you'd think you'd be able to see that, but sometimes you can't see it. You don't notice it.
That's right.
This is what we're all about in trying to provide this service. But it's a free service through Lions Club, the only organization that provides the free service of this type.
Well, it's a very valuable service, too. Well, I should have said that David Williams is from the Ames Lions Breakfast Club. I left the breakfast part out before.
Yes, because there's three clubs in Ames.
And you can find out about this screening device and how you can make use of it. You just look at the Lions Club website, or you can call David himself at 233-3661. And we will put this contact information up on our website.
Yes, or they can contact their local Lions Club if they're in Nevada or Story City or McCallsburg or Lions Club.
Okay, so any of the Lions Clubs, they can make use of this.
Yeah, we call it KidSight.
So that they should look for that on the website, should they?
Yes, you can look under Iowa Kids Site and also find a website.
Okay, and now we have Tricia Crane, who just got her grant in the spring, but she has completed it. Why did you tell us about that, Tricia?
Well, I am with the ARC of Story County. All ARCs are different. We all are known for being the advocacy-based organization for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. The ARC of Story County is best known for what is called our Active Lifestyles Program. It's a social and recreational program for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities who reside in Story County. And part of that program is that we oversee and coordinate the Special Olympics training for our Special Olympic athletes here who reside in Story County. We received our grant specifically from the Story County Youth Philanthropists. We received $1,000 to help towards our community rental fee costs. A large portion of our budget goes towards renting athletic facility space from either Iowa State University, the City of Ames, or the Ames Community School District. And we got in sort of a pickle last year. Normally, we are able to use the All Iowa Attack basketball facility free of charge. However, they had gotten so busy with their basketball and volleyball programs that they no longer had space for our basketball athletes. And so we ended up having to spend about $3,000 renting basketball space from the Ames Community School District in using the middle school. And that was quite a large hit for our budget when we're such a small organization.
Yes. So this grant helped you with the rental payments?
Oh, tremendously. Yes. Mm-hmm. It helped us pay those community rental fees costs so that we could continue with our basketball program.
Okay. And let's put in your contact information. The website is all one word. And the ARC spelt with a C, thearcstory.org. Mm-hmm. And we will put that up on our website, too.
You know, one thing I think is very interesting about the grant that the ARC received is they just needed that support for 1 year. Because didn't you then go on to obtain free space again?
Yes. So this year we obtained our space back at the All Iowa Tech facility, thus not needing to apply for any type of grant this year or needing to put those additional costs into our budget for this fiscal year. So the funds really helped to fill a gap that we had last year and that we did not need this year.
That's wonderful. So it really helped them out in that difficult time though. Well, this has been very interesting. I've been talking to Jennifer Garst, who's the executive director of Story County Community Foundation, and she's been telling us about the various grants that are offered here in Story County, in Ames and in the smaller communities. And also talking with us today have been two recipients of these grants, David Williams, who represents Breakfast Lions Club of Ames, who was able to buy some special equipment for taking photographs of small children's eyes to detect any problems very early, and also Tricia Crane, who represents ARC of Story County. Thank you all for coming in to talk to us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Kay Potok for Local Talk, reporting on the Story County Community Foundation, which is the organization we're featuring this month on our Community Service Appreciation Program. And this is Local Talk, and as the hour draws to a close, I thank you for listening today. I've been your host, Ursula Rudenberg, and my guests today were Jeff Benson from the City of Ames Planning and Housing, Art Baumgartner and Sam Stagg, who are architects from HALA Architecture Planning, HALA Architecture Structure Planning, and they were talking about a facade program for Campustown. We also heard from Jennifer Garst, Executive Director of Story County Community Foundation, David Williams, President of Ames Breakfast Lions Club, and Tricia Crane from the ARC of Story County, interviewed by Kay Potok. Local Talk was engineered by Richard Morrison. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Chelly. Other music you heard was Winter Solstice by Ralph Towner. Local Talk is streaming live at khoifm.org and archived at khoifm.org. So if there's anything you want to go back to hear again, or in this case to see the idea book for Campustown, you can go to khoifm.org. It's the end of the year and we're raising money so we need to operate KHOI. So thank you to all of you who have been joining our membership drive. Thank you for your participation. And we ask that you consider joining if you have not joined already. You can donate at khoifm.org, or if you prefer to send it in the mail or just come by the studio with your donation, you will find our address at khoifm.org. Thank you for your participation. You're listening, thinking with us, and maybe even giving us feedback on Local Talk is why we do this. You are our community. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.